I think we'll start. This is week four of the series. By the way, part of the series was to learn about worrying and worrying about things that are going to happen in the future. We haven't got there yet. We will. Don't worry, we will. That's because it needs worrying particularly is a specific area, but it needs the introduction of understanding our thoughts and understanding how we monitor our thoughts and faulty thinking and so on and so forth. So we're working up slowly. Just a couple of housekeeping announcements. First of all, it was on the thing before, we have the Mindful Minyan tomorrow night for those that are interested. The Kabbalah series, which is starting a week from tonight, that's for men and women. Also, I wanted to point out that on...
Sorry, which is Kabbalah self-esteem?
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you the thing if you want. Thursday nights for 3 weeks. Yeah. Also, for the last 2 years, it's been Thursday morning, but this year, Purim is on a Tuesday. It's Tuesday, the 10th of March. So... I can't change what Purim is, so we'll have to do it on Tuesday. So we are going to have, as we have done the previous years, so please come along. We'll have 9:30, a little morning tea, a little shiur, as we always do, normally when it's on a Thursday, but we'll do it on Tuesday. We'll still have the Thursday that week, but the Purim special. Also, for those who want to listen to the Megillah, we'll have a Megillah reading for men and women at 8:30. Okay, got a lot to cover today, so we'll try and get to it. So first of all, let's just start with a bit of a review. A review of last week. So the first thing we talked about, we added in that component that not only do thoughts rule our emotion, in other words, not only does our brain rule our heart, not only is the way we think affect the way we feel, but the other side of the coin is that behavior also affects our emotions. So the concept that we've spoken about many times, that the heart follows what we do, so if we do something positive, we start to feel positive. That's an important component. We'll get to later again today. We've talked about the last couple of weeks the ABC model, the activating event, and then it's really beliefs, and then the consequences, how we feel, how we talk, how we act. And often we connect A to the C, but it's actually not that way. It's the C, the activating event doesn't change, but the consequences change because of the way we believe. And therefore we have the D, which we learn to dispute the way we believe, and that we see our beliefs, which again, we're going to get to more detail that today. Last week, we also talked about, we were focusing on a particular chapter in Sarah Edelman's book of Change Your Thinking. So we talked about happiness coming from flexible thinking, or what they call cognitive flexibility. And also giving up control, which we went into on a deeper level. And we talked about the following. We talked about the idea of happiness being connected in Jewish thought, being connected with the concept of humility, right? In other words, I'm contrasting with ego. So we fight the ego. Ego brings inflexible thinking. Ego brings egocentricity, where it's all about me and my pleasure, what I need now. Ego gives us the ability or the desire to need control. Sometimes ego results in low self-esteem because we're protecting our fragile self, which all brings to irrational and destructive and self-defeating behavior, and nevertheless we engage in it because we are designed with an ego, we all are, which we have to deal with and we have to sort of dispute and fight. Where the contrast to that is, if we stop being egocentric and we try to reveal the humility within ourselves, and humility again does not mean being a nothing, humility actually means that we are something, part of a bigger something, we're part of God's creation. There's room for everyone. We don't need to protect ourselves. We're strong enough, and therefore we're able to be humble. So therefore we have these components that we talked about last week, which is the belief in God, and therefore the belief in the godly soul, which has an infusion of godliness, coming together with the concept that we all have a purpose and a mission, coupled with the idea of Hashgacha Pratit, that everything happens by divine orchestration and by divine reason, and therefore there's a meaning and purpose, and we only choose our response. We don't necessarily choose what happens. And all that comes from this concept of letting go of our ego self, and therefore being a little bit more humble in that sense, and that brings happiness because that brings flexible thinking, it brings calmness, it brings responding to things that don't go away with understanding that it's there for a purpose, it's there for a reason, it's there for a mission, and so on and so forth. So really, what happens is, right, even in the ABC model, just to sort of summarize this, the A is the activating activity, the thing that happened, right, that triggered our negative thinking. And then there's the beliefs, and beliefs now have a few different components. There's the thoughts, what we're actually consciously thinking. There's the beliefs that we have, like everyone should drive carefully, everyone should be responsible. There's the deeper beliefs, and that's what we took it last week. We took it to a deeper level. In other words, these beliefs, where do they come from? It comes from wrong value system, wrong faith-based thinking, and so on and so forth, which all leads to the consequences, which is our emotional responses, the actions that we take, the communication, the way we speak to other people, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, today we're going to unpack all of this in a very important way, but first, a couple of things. First of all, I just want to make a clarification, and sort of came up a little bit last week in conversation with someone afterwards. And I've made this clarification a few times, but it's important. All of what we're talking about in this series, focusing on at least, is things that we respond to emotionally that are everyday routine stuff, right? The world doesn't, or life doesn't go the way we want it to on a regular, normal level, right? We don't always get the stuff on time. We don't always achieve what we wanted to achieve. People don't always speak to us the way we think they're going to speak to us. Just the regular day-to-day things that go wrong. Not tragic events, just sometimes irritating, sometimes painful, but regular routine stuff that happens to everyone. Now, the reason I'm emphasizing that is because when it comes to those things, what we're talking about and discussing should be, not is always, but should be a little bit easier to implement. In other words, this concept of acceptance, the concept of everything happens for a reason, the concept that there's a mission and a purpose in this, and all of those concepts are easier to implement when we're talking about daily routine stuff. When we talk about much more painful stuff, like tragic events and trauma and things like that, the principles are somewhat the same, but the strategies are different because it's much harder to implement. Right? It's much harder to put into practice, and I'm not going into that area because that's not really the subject we're talking about. We're talking about the things that happen to all of us every single day, which we all get irritated by, some of us more than others. Okay. Now, I want to just go a little bit further, just to quote something that Sarah Edelman says, because it's a nice way of putting it, just more about our beliefs and our thoughts. In one section in the book, she talks about a string of what she calls faulty thinking, like sort of subcategories almost, right? I just want to run through them because they're good. So one of the things she talks about is the tyranny of shoulds. I should always do a perfect job. I should never make mistakes. You should always talk nicely. My child should always clean up their mess, right? It's interesting to know how, it's interesting upon reflection, how many times we use the word should. Should is an expectation that something needs to happen a certain way, and the reality is that things don't happen that way. So that's an interesting way to think, like if we reflect on our own thinking, are we falling into the shoulds trap kind of thing, right? I should never be afraid. I should be smart. I should be clever. I should be, you know, I should have a good job, and all these kind of things. The next thing she talks about is awfulizing. Now, awfulizing is an important one because awfulizing means we use these words also, and the words make a difference, as we've spoken about many times, that the way we speak sometimes also relates to the way we feel, right? Something like, let's say we messed up, or we don't have a job, or a person had a relationship, they're not in a relationship at the moment, and they're lonely, whatever the case is. All these things are always uncomfortable and always bad, but we tend to, or like, you know, something's broken in a home, or the computer's crashed, whatever the case is, we say, oh, it's terrible, it's awful, right? And what we do is we actually work ourselves into a negative frenzy emotionally because we reinforce the concept that it's awful. Now, no one says it's good, it's not good, it's not awful necessarily. Right? Life's going to go on, tomorrow it's going to be the same, in 5 weeks from now you'll laugh, you look back at it and laugh, right? But we tend to reinforce our own negative thinking by what she calls awfulizing, which I thought was a good way to put it. The other way is, the third thing is that sometimes we overgeneralize, like, you know, you never call me, or, you know, we do this with our parenting often, we do this. For those who have younger children, we do this a lot, like, you just always make a mess, you never do this, you never speak to me nicely, that kind of thing, right? And that's never true. That's called, you know, or everyone does this, or no one came, or that kind of thing, right? So that's overgeneralizing. And then again, that's a type of thinking which just reinforces our negative thinking, which therefore reinforces our negative emotion. Personalizing. right? Personalizing means being responsible, taking everything personally. Sometimes it's about putting ourselves down, but again, it's also reinforcing negative behavior or negative feelings, right? Or, you know, you're having a function or you're having a dinner and someone leaves early. Oh, so probably weren't having a good time. So you personalize right away. Maybe they got an appointment. Like, I'm very grateful. Sometimes on a Thursday morning, some of you tell me, you know, I need to leave early today, and that's very polite and it's good. But I need to tell you that in case you forget to tell me, you can still leave early if you need to, because I won't personalize it. Not that I won't do any other stuff. I might, but this one, I'm getting better not doing. Okay. Mind reading is another good one, right? We like jump into a conclusion because we know exactly what the person was thinking. Like, I know what you're going to respond, right? You know, I think I told you this story once. I heard in school, certain things stick in your mind from good teachers. This was a particularly good teacher. His name is Rabbi Kreisler, and he was a Chumash teacher, and he was wonderful. And some of the short things he told us stuck in my head. And he used to tell us the story that we're in a shtetl about two farms, and one person needed his horse wasn't feeling well or something, so he needed a horse. So he decided to go to his neighbor. And the way he thinks, you know, my neighbor's not such a nice guy, so he probably won't lend it to me. So why am I going? Maybe I should go. I should try. And goes back and forth in his mind. And he's really thinking about his terrible neighbor that probably doesn't like him and not in the mood and doesn't want to be kind. Like he knows exactly, right? Anyway, he ends up, through the whole thought process, he ends up actually knocking on the door, and the neighbor opens up the door and he says, you know what? Keep your horse. I don't need it. So that's... Blaming, of course, is another one. Often we just blame people, that's not taking responsibility. These are all subsets of negative thinking. Okay. Now, we're going to talk about... I really want to get to the concept of monitoring our own thinking, but before we get to that, I want to just touch on something which I think is very relevant to our society that we live in. And it's a section in a book, and I think it's really, really important. Because I think nowadays... a lot of this negative thinking, we get upset with people, we get irritated, we get jealous, maybe we feel personally insulted, and so on. Or we get angry, you know. A lot of that happens a lot quicker nowadays. Because it starts off with frustration. And there are bigger levels of frustration today. So I just wanted to share this with you, I thought it was really good. She talks about a condition called LFT. Low frustration tolerance, right? Where something happens and you right away start to get anxious, you start to lose yourself, right? You're not even sure why, and then sort of you realize why you're angry and you start to scream and you start to be upset and you start to be offended and so, or judgmental, whatever the case is, right? Low frustration tolerance. Why? Now, some people have a better level of tolerance for frustration than others. A lot of people have LFT, low frustration tolerance, right? It could just be a nature, it could be a personality, and that's fine. It doesn't mean we're bound by it, we need to work on it, but it's some people have a predisposition to just having an irritable temperament kind of thing. However, it is also true, and this is, I think, really important, just to bear in mind, that modern society has increased all of this. Modern society, with all its goodness, has increased the tendency to become frustrated, which comes together with negative thinking, which comes with negative emotional responses, very, very quickly. Why? And by the way, this has been documented. Ellis, one of the authors of CBT, he said he observed that in modern Western countries, people become frustrated easily. Why? Because part of it has to do with our lifestyle. So we're fortunate, right? Very fortunate today that we have running water in houses. We can stay warm. We have appliances to keep us warm and cold during the summer and the winter. We can find information very, very quickly, and so on and so forth. And as each year progresses, we get more and more at our fingertips, we get more and more in control of things, and what happens is our expectation increases daily, right? Expectation keeps on increasing. Therefore, our sense of false control over everything around us increases. Our level of expectation increases, the things that we take for granted increases, right? And that's such an important thing to bear in mind. First of all, it's important to bear in mind because it is one of the reasons that we get frustrated very, very quickly. How many of you feel frustrated or irritated when your internet goes down at home? Right? This might be not relevant to everyone sitting in this room, but most of you will remember very well the time you didn't have internet. Right? And yet now you sort of can't live without it, or I can't live without it. I'm guilty of the same thing, right? Working on it, I hope, but I'm guilty of the same thing, right? Because suddenly the day doesn't go because we're so dependent on it, right? Or things stop working, or I don't know, the plumbing goes down, or whatever the case is, right? Because our expectation level is so much, and we take for granted so much. So that's just important to understand, number one, on that level. Secondly, it's generally important to understand on the level of gratitude. We've spoken very often about the Siddur, the prayer book that starts at the beginning with morning brachot, right? And those morning brachot are really, really important. In fact, I'd reckon, you know, even if someone doesn't have time to pray every day, these morning brachot are really important. Why? Because it's such a powerful way, if we focus on them, we say them properly, that is, of starting the day with a level of gratitude where we go right back to basics. If you look at those morning brachot, it just blesses God. Thank you, God, for being able to see. Thanks for being able to walk, for the clothes that I wear, for the shoes that I have, for just the world in general, right? Just the basic stuff that we take for granted. And we take, nowadays we take so much for granted, maybe there should be a few extra blessings for technology and computers and more. But it's all included, right? So we it's such an important thing. Why? Because having gratitude, as we'll see later also, can serve to minimize the frustration. Because when things go wrong, just to stop for a second and to think about all the good things that we do have and all the blessings that we do have, despite life's challenges, it kind of puts things into perspective a little bit. And just important to understand that that's part of the problem nowadays, and that's why the subject was so important about dealing with our negative emotional responses, which comes from negative thinking and so on and so forth, because today the LFT is so much greater. The low tolerance for frustration has become greater. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Now, when we talk about low frustration tolerance, more than anything else, part of the strategies in dealing generally with this stuff, but particularly with the concept of frustration about something that has gone wrong, part of that strategy number one is the concept of acceptance. Right. And she talks, Sarah Edelman talks in her book about practicing acceptance. Taking a deep breath, being mindful, being in the moment, and practicing the concept is, this is the way this day is going to be. And that's it. And then calming down and learning to accept, which, as we spoke last week, is much, much easier and much stronger if we add the spiritual element to this of faith and hashgacha pratit. If I wake up in the morning and my internet doesn't work, it wasn't meant to work, and I just need to adapt. I need to accept that it wasn't meant to work, and I need to accept that there's a purpose in not working, whatever that purpose is, but I've got to make this day as productive, as meaningful as possible without technology, without the internet. Right? That's the first thing. The second thing, that's again going back to the concept that our heart follows our actions, is to learn the art of becoming solution-focused. Right? Now, there's two types of solutions, and we'll see this later. But there's a solution which is a practical solution. Oh, sorry, that's wrong. Right. There's a practical solution, and even more powerful, which we'll come to at the end, hopefully, is something which I'm going to call a disputing solution. But just for now, the practical solution. The practical solution is, part of acceptance is, once I have at least some level of acceptance, then the question is, what am I going to do about it? See, what frustration does, frustration almost becomes a crutch. Like, it almost becomes, you sort of want to be in the world of frustration because that at least gives you something to do, right? And then that at least you can find who to blame, who to scream at, who to be upset with, the world, the universe, the company, whatever the case is, right? Which doesn't do any good for you, doesn't do any good for anyone else. It doesn't produce anything, it doesn't fix anything. So it's obviously ineffective and destructive. So the frustration, therefore, has to be responded to by some level of acceptance, which, as soon as we have a feeling of acceptance, so then what am I going to do? Oh, so I'm going to do something about it. Once I accept this is the way it is, see, frustration also, I've never understood this, I don't understand it by myself either. Frustration is some sort of also illusion that if I'm frustrated enough, it's going to change. Now, last time I checked, nothing changes when I'm frustrated, right? You can scream all you want, the thing's broken, right? However, with acceptance, Acceptance doesn't mean that I have to accept this is the way it has to be the whole day. Not necessarily. This is the way it is now, and I'm not changing it. That doesn't mean I can't change in 10 minutes if I do something about it. So maybe I should call a company. Maybe that could come out today. Maybe not. I don't know. But each step of the way, I can, right? So she brings a nice little story just as an example, right? She says, Stanley's setting off to work on Monday. As he opens his garage door, he discovers that someone has parked their car over his driveway. Right? The worst, right? The absolute worst. Can you feel yourself getting upset already? I won't use the word she used over there, but she says he thinks to himself, this is such a pain in the neck. Why can't people do the right thing? Right? Again, everyone has to do the right thing. Everyone should do the right thing, right? Stan feels frustrated and angry. So the car's still there, right? So acceptance, there's a car here. I can't get to it. Now what am I going to do about it? So as soon as you learn the art of becoming solution focused, I know it sounds simple, but it's, for some reason it's not. Right? So solution focus means, okay, so you can sit in the car and honk the horn. Maybe someone's there. Right? You can knock at all the neighbors. You can leave a note on the windscreen asking, like, you know, please don't do this. You can call the police to ask for assistance. It's not a joke, by the way. You can really do this. I did this once. It's not a negative thing to do. It's just, like, if your car's there for a long time. Actually, once there was a car across my driveway at home, and after a while, I actually started to get suspicious because it was a really strange-looking car. And at the end, it actually was. Police actually came, and they found the guy. There was a whole scene outside my house. Actually, put him across. It was crazy. It's a real story. And also, you can call your supervisor, tell her that what happened. Let her know, I'm going to be late. I'm taking public transport. I'm really sorry. It was my fault. I came in and someone crossed my car, right? So you end up coming half an hour late to work, but you're not frustrated. You're productive. Frustrated means you go to work anyways a different way. You're frustrated a whole day. You don't get things done. It becomes a downward spiral, becomes negative and destructive, self-destructive. So that's the concept of frustration. Really, all of this begins with frustration. Frustration is much worse today because we just expect things to happen much more than we used to. Acceptance made easier by understanding there's a purpose in all of this. I can still do something about it. Purpose doesn't mean I have to let it be. Purpose means for now this is the way it's supposed to do. Maybe the purpose is for me to be calm and solution focused. Think of solutions and then move on. Okay. Easier said than done, of course, but that's how we do it. Now, having said all of that, let's go now to, and this is like a really important practical, not theoretical. I'm emphasizing what we're going to do now is actually really, really practical. It actually can be done, and it's actually done much more effectively if you do it actually with a pen and paper. If not before the fact, at least after the fact, after you've messed up and screamed at a person, at least you can debrief, right? So it's called monitoring our thoughts or disputing our thoughts, right? So we need to know the art of how to monitor our thinking. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to show you a way that if we get into a situation where we begin to feel frustrated, or we instinctively just lost it and got frustrated and got angry and got negative and had negative thoughts and negative emotions and negative consequences, how we can still monitor our thinking. It's still a very good idea to monitor our thinking because we can avoid it happening a second time, right? Now, we know this in Jewish sources, we know that critical to our growth is the concept of cheshbon ha-nefesh. Cheshbon ha-nefesh means reflection, thinking, right? Not obsessively thinking. Some people think all the time about what they're doing, and that's not a good idea because most of the time we need to get on with the job. But reflection has its place, whether it's daily, whether it's when something happens. We know in Jewish life, in the Jewish year cycle, for example, we have a month called the month of Elul, just before the new year, where we have, it's called the Chodesh HaCheshbon, the month of reflection, where we actually take stock. Where are we? What are our values? How we cope well with things that don't go our way? How we in relationships between other people? How we spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, and so on, right? So why is it so important? Because we can never change anything unless we actually know what we're changing, right? And because when we lose it, and we get frustrated, and we get anxious, and we get upset, and we get stressed, it's the feeling, the emotion that we're dealing with, but as we said the very first time, it's not the emotion that needs to be changed, it's everything around the emotional response that needs to be changed, which is how we're thinking, what our beliefs are, what are our deeper beliefs, and what is our behavior, everything that's around the emotion is really what needs to change, which will then affect the emotion, right? A lot of that is not conscious. A lot of that, we're actually not conscious of what we're thinking. We're not connecting the dots always. No, we don't always connect, well, I thought that way, I responded that way, I felt that way, because really that's part of my belief system, which I haven't, either I didn't tap into or I didn't internalize enough. We don't always do that naturally. And that's why it's a really critical exercise to have once in a while that cheshbon. And sometimes it's hard just to think about it. You actually have to write it down. You actually have to break it down. It is very, very powerful. And I don't normally talk like this, but I will, just for the point, because I actually did this myself recently. And like I've told you many times, and I'll do it again soon. I only tell you the stories that worked, okay? I mean, they're not stories. I'm human like the rest of you, but, or most of you, maybe some of you are really good. So I don't tell you the stories that didn't work, but, or sometimes I do, but mostly I don't. So I'll tell you the stories that work. I actually did this recently where I was in a situation for a couple of days and it was really, something was bothering me and I actually couldn't even, it was bothering me and then it was bothering me. Why it was bothering me? And you know, sometimes that happens and it just wasn't working. And I actually did this. I actually sat down and broke it down, wrote it down, and it was the most amazingly powerful thing. And acted on it, and it was actually incredible. So I'm recommending it personally, right? Telling it works. Now, so what Sarah Edelman does, she actually devises like a monitoring, a thought monitoring form, which I've modified slightly in order to include the stuff we talked about last week, which I think is really critical. That not just to think what our belief system is, but what's behind our belief system. Because then we can work on that, and we can work on our values, and we can work on our belief systems and our faith system at a very deep level, at a very fighting the ego level, a subconscious level even, and then that can be much more powerful and much more effective. So this is the way it kind of goes, and then we're going to go through a few examples, right? Now you've got it, by the way, on the back of your thing, which I'm going to pull out here. Hang on a second. Yep. Okay. So we have this situation. I'm going to run through them and then I'm going to go through a couple of examples where you see how it actually works. We have a situation, and the situation happens, whatever the situation is. Now, the feelings, as we said, comes from the way we think, but the thing we can identify first is, what are we feeling? We're feeling anxious, we're feeling upset, we're feeling angry, we're feeling jealous, we're feeling, right? So it's important to understand what is it that I felt, right? Not that I was irritated, but what exactly were you feeling? Try to identify sort of the emotions of what actually you're feeling, right? Then there's the immediate thoughts. Immediate thoughts means like, so what I'm thinking, like it's unfair, it's terrible, it's awful, those are the things that I'm thinking now, right? Then we have the beliefs which I call the conscious beliefs. In other words, what is the belief system that's making me feel that way? So for example, I'm thinking that way because everyone should drive responsibly, right? So that's the belief system that is getting me angry with the fact that I'm feeling really upset that the person cut me off, right? Then there's the thinking errors. The thinking errors are the things we talked about at the beginning of today. So like, have I fallen into one of these categories? Now, because I'm thinking that's my belief, that means then do I believe, am I the should people or the awful people or generalizing people or the black and white people, right? So it's important to understand like what is the area that I need to work on generally, yeah? Then this is the one I added in, that the deeper driver beliefs. So let's go back really now deeply. What are my value system? What's my faith? What's bringing me to have these beliefs? Which I think is really important, because if we can get to the core, we get to the foundation, then we can really be much more effective, right? Then we need to start with the D. So then once I've identified what this is all about, now I can start with a plan. So let's start with the logical disputing, right? And then belief-value disputing. Now, what I mean by that? So logical disputing would be something like, let's dispute that belief. So no, people don't always drive responsibly. People do make mistakes, and that's fine. Right? That's just a logical dispute of what I'm thinking. Is everyone following me? Yeah, we're all good?
Yes.
Okay. And then, let's go to the value-belief disputing. In other words, what caused me at the beginning, what was the deep belief system that caused me to feel this way? And let's try and dispute that, right? And then let's take positive action, solutions. What is the solution? So what am I going to do about it? Next time or this time, whatever the case is. And then finally we have behavioral dispute, which I'm going to have to explain a bit at the end. Okay, so that's just running through. So let's see how this all works. Let's take some examples. Okay. So I'm going to read you an example that she puts in her book. Okay. So this is a nice little story. So Leanne agreed to her boss's request to stay back at work to finish a project. When she returned home that evening, Leanne discovered that her dog, Fred, had escaped through a broken plank in the backyard fence. After ringing around anxiously, Leanne discovered that Fred had been picked up by, and I don't know what this means, by the pound. I imagine it's some sort of...
No,
oh, that, yeah. Sorry, I don't know the other dogs. I don't know what you're saying.
All right.
No, I've never had a dog ever. I'm actually scared of dogs. Sorry, so what is it again? It's the organization that... Okay. Okay, good. Right. And it was going to cost her $200 to retrieve him. Okay. Anxiety, which she had in the beginning about where's the dog and what happened to him, turned into frustration. It seemed so unfair. She was doing him a good turn at work. She did him a favor, right? You know. And now she was inconvenienced and out of pocket. Right? So the natural thing is she's upset, she's screaming how unfair it is. In such a situation, you're not sure who to scream at, but you just scream and you get upset and it's unfair and you let it out on your children, on your parents, on your spouse, whatever, right? So you lose it. So let's go through the thoughts. If she could catch herself in time, or if she couldn't and did this later, she would do, it's a simple example. Obviously, we have much more complicated examples sometimes, but she would do this, right? She would go through this thought monitoring process. So let's go through it. So the situation is, after agreeing to work late, I came home to discover that Fred had escaped and been picked up by the pound. It cost me $200 to get him back. Fine, so that's the situation, right? By the way, that's not going to change. That is the situation, that's not changing. Some situations you can change, some situations you can't change. Try and get any organization to say no, to change your rules. It's not going to work normally. So the feelings, obviously, frustration, angry, she's tense, right? So that's important. That's an important process. So you identify the situation, and then you identify, what am I feeling? That's important to identify, because you can't really work on it unless you actually know what you're feeling. It's not good to say, I'm just feeling, right? You've got to know what you're feeling, right? Okay. What are the thoughts that drive that feeling, the immediate thoughts that is? The immediate thoughts would be, how unfair, right? I was doing them a good turn, and now it's cost me. I should have said no, and it wouldn't have happened, right? I should have never, you know how you get it? I should have never said yes. I'm such an idiot. Why did I say yes to that stupid boss who takes advantage of me, right? Sounds familiar? Okay, what's the immediate beliefs, the conscious beliefs that drives that thinking process, right?
Doesn't pay to be good.
Things should, and not should. Things should be fair. It's fair. I stayed back from work.
Why did it happen?
That kind of thing, right? But also, no, it's not a question, also belief system. So generous actions should be rewarded, yeah, not punished. And also the belief is, this has turned out to be a really crazy day, a really bad day, right? Okay. Part of the thinking errors, as soon as once you identify, like she identifies her thoughts, that you say, whoops, I've just put myself into a category, so now I'm part of the should people. Things should be like this, they should be like that, right? Good things shouldn't be punished, things should be fair. So she realizing that she's a should person, right? Okay. Now I think we need to know, what are the deeper beliefs? Okay. This is important. What are the deeper beliefs that are driving the beliefs that things should be fair and things should be turned out the way I wanted them to, and they should be rewarded and so on? So there's a couple of deeper beliefs here which are very, very important. And this is where we get to the Jewish perspective. It's not in her book, but this is, I'm adding to it, right? There's a couple of things. First of all, there's a belief system that she had a really bad day. In other words, her day had no purpose. Right? In other words, her good deed was for no good reason. Just to help someone out. She gained nothing from it. Yeah? Understand that. That's just if you think about it, right? So she did a good deed, should have received a reward. In fact, she got punished for a good deed, meaning that actually it was just a loss of a day. According to her, it was a loss of a day, right? The second thing is that things should be in her control. It's a control thing. In other words, if I did this, I expect that to happen, right? And we, in other words, take expectations, in other words, the way I think things should turn out are the way they're supposed to turn out, Because subtly, I put in, I expect to get out. I put in a dollar to the vending machine, I expect the Coke to come out. That's a cheap vending machine, that is. Right? Missing the God aspect. Well, maybe not. Maybe I was supposed to do a good deed for the sake of doing a good deed. Right? Now, we'll see how you dispute this in a minute, right? Also, there's an issue of gratitude here, and I think this is important to bring up, because when you say, I had a really, really bad day, and you break it down, right? Did you really have a bad day? Yeah, no one wants to lose $200, I get that, right? And people were very upset, it's kind of a waste of money, it was useless. But if you sat down, and you, as people do with gratitude journals and things like that, and you go through the day, she could actually come out knowing that she had a really good day, right? And gratitude, by the way, is a really, really strong belief concept that we need to engage in, because we need to identify the good, which is often much more than the bad. Not that the bad doesn't happen, or the seemingly bad, I should say, right? So she's got this notion, this very deep notion, that what she did was a waste of time, and her day was actually bad, right? Now, that's a problem. Why? So what she needs... Okay, so that's what's worse. Okay, so she has this notion that good things always need to be rewarded, otherwise they're not good and they're a waste of time. She obviously got a lack of gratitude, and the issue of control where expectations should happen. I expect things to happen, that's the way they should happen. Okay. So now let's start with the disputing process. So now we come to D. D means disputing. The first thing is to dispute the logical dispute, right? So the logical thing is, just on a very logical level, is it true that good things are always rewarded? No. It's not true, right? Could sort of frustrating things happen even though you've done good things? Yes. And things happen. It's a normal part of life. That's just a very logical thing. Frustration, normal part of life. Things happen. Dogs escape. Wood, everything can happen, right? Is it going to make a difference on the long term? The fact that I'm out of pocket for $200 is going to make a long-term difference in my situation? Probably not. So why am I getting so upset, right? That's what we call logical disputing. But then there's deeper disputing. And this is really important, because when we deeply dispute something, it's not only going to help in this case, it's going to help generally. And this is why it's so important, right? In other words, when we go to deeper disputing, it helps us not only for now, it helps us generally to get things in perspective. And when we do this often, we actually start to build up and we start to internalize a thinking pattern, which hopefully will help us, maybe not all the time, but at least some of the time. So the deeper dispute goes to things like, one second, there's hashgacha pratit. I came home, something happened, it was meant to happen. Do I know the reason? I don't know. However, you know, if we explore these things and we research these things, I really need to say, Baruch Hashem, why? You know, sometimes we have this perspective that certain people, and we know many, many stories of the Baal Shem Tov about this, and many is much written on this concept without going into too much detail, but sometimes there are things that are destined to happen to certain people. And if they happen in this way, thank God.
Yeah.
Right? Thank God. You know, if I was destined to have something happen to me that was painful today, and all it ended up being was my dog going for a walk about me losing $200, but I've got him back and everything's fine and the long term is good, Baruch Hashem. Thank you, God. Right? Could be a kapara. We have that concept kapara, maybe. I don't know. I'm not spiritual. I know exactly what it is. But maybe kapara might be one of the things. It might be. And we have all kinds of Kabbalistic things where sometimes people have things on their soul that need certain cleansing or whatever the case is, right? I'm not talking in negative terms of punishment and that. That's not the issue. I'm talking about just certain people do have to go through certain experiences. Certain people have to go through certain tests. There are certain times that God, we pray every day for God not to test us, but sometimes He does. And the purpose of a test, as I think I've shared with you many times, the word in Hebrew for test is nisayon. And the word for nisayon means test, but also means to uplift, right? Tests are there to uplift us. They're there to make us better people. They're there to make us stronger people. So if I come back and I sort of dispute on a deeper level, and I say, look, everything happens for a reason. God obviously did this. And if the reason was because God wanted to test my patience or frustration level, or He wanted to test me in any way, thank God it was just this. There can be much greater tests. And people, unfortunately, have very, very great tests sometimes, right? So if that has to be the test, thank you, right? The gratitude, all these things. And then, of course, control. I don't control the way it's going to go out. And I plan the day, and I sometimes it works out. And then, of course, the deeper dispute is, what do you mean it was a waste of a day? A mitzvah is eternal. It's a very important fundamental concept in Judaism. If I did a favor for someone and I stayed back, of course it'll be rewarded. Maybe not right now, that had to happen with my dog, but it's eternal. A mitzvah never, and if I'm here, again, goes back to the concept of purpose and mission. If I really believe there's a purpose and mission to existence, and part of that purpose is to be kind, and part of that purpose is do someone a favor and help someone out sometimes, then what do you mean you had a waste of a day? You didn't. You helped someone. That is amazing. That achievement is incredible. That achievement has added to your reservoir of becoming better. It's added to your steps of growth. You became a better person today. Not only become a better person today, but if you can appreciate that you helped someone, and even though you ended up losing $200, and you handle that okay, you become an unbelievably better person that day. And that's amazing. So it hasn't been a waste of a day at all. It's been an incredibly productive day. Yeah.
Where does acceptance come in here?
Well, that's the point. So acceptance is just, so acceptance is you accept that's what happened, but you do it by disputing, right?
So this is the process.
But it's made acceptance is much easier, as I said before, when you understand that everything has a purpose. You understand there's a chabratit. You understand that there's a mission. You understand that actually there's an opportunity, not a challenge, right? And you put it in context. And if it had to happen, you know, I'm not in control, number one. Hakol b'dei shemayim, everything in the hands of heaven. If I'm not in control, if this is what had to happen, thank God this is what happened and not something else. So there's a whole perspective, deeper disputing that has to go around. And if a person writes this down, you actually care. I'm not suggesting you do this. I mean, we get frustrated many times during the day. I'm not suggesting every time this happens you do a thought monitoring reform, because it'll become a full-time occupation. And I'm not sure that for some of us at least.
You'd have a novel.
Right? I'm not sure what everyone's mission is, but I don't think it's about filling out these forms all day. But but it's a very powerful exercise to do once in a while. I'm just gonna run through one more example, and then go to what I was going to do. Okay. Because I want to get to that last one, disputing behavior, which is amazing. So listen. This is for those of you who have kids, or have kids that are young now, you'll know what this means. So Nina frequently feels frustrated. Why? Because her two young sons often make a mess in various rooms of the house and take no responsibility for tidying up. As a result, Nina is frequently cleaning up after them. This is the part a lot of you will appreciate, I think. Her husband, Tim, does little to help her. Okay. So let's run through this quickly. Situation, the kids are making a mess, right? She's got to clean up there. They don't help. And I came back yesterday, and I just lost it because the place was a pigsty. Okay. Feelings, frustrated, angry. Feeling, right? About to do something. Thoughts? Okay, thoughts is very simple. I can't stand this mess. Why can't they take some responsibility to clean after themselves? Why does it always have to fall on me to clean after them, right? So I'm running through this quickly, but it's very powerful. So the belief's the same thing. The beliefs are people should be more responsible. They should take an interest in keeping the house clean. Tim should be more supportive of my concerns. So she's obviously fell into the always, the shoulds, and so on and so forth, right? Now, what's the dispute? The dispute simply, the dispute is a logical dispute and a deeper dispute. Sorry, first of all, what's the deeper beliefs? The deeper beliefs is we expect always people to do always the right thing. I mean, that's a ridiculous dispute. And again, it's an issue of control also. And also, there's an interesting, very deep dispute here. Like, and this is true with all relationships, but especially in parenting, you see it clearly. Sometimes parents fall into the trap of being angry with children for a certain type of behavior, which is actually a bad behavior and needs to be fixed. That's true. But there's a deeper belief which affects their whole judgment. And a deeper belief is that people are defined by their behavior. Right? My son, he's such an irresponsible person. He just never cleans up himself, right? And kind of you get so upset by that. I didn't mean my son, by the way. I mean, it was what people say, right? He wasn't like I was a kid, but that was fine. Right? So you start to define people by their behavior. That's a very deep belief. Why? Because you actually, these are children that sometimes parents start to find it difficult to love. Because they're always getting under their skin. Why? Over one bad behavior, which is bad, and it needs to be fixed. But you get so frustrated, ineffective, number one. Number two, you start to define people by their behavior. And define people's behavior is a very deeper belief. Why? It comes from a very deep error. Goes to the whole thing we've talked about so many times, that we are not defined by behavior. We have to take responsibility for our behavior, but we're not defined by behavior. this kid is a really good kid. Just doesn't know. And has, by the way, again, also doing a bit of a map, like this is the only thing the kid does, is irresponsible. He just makes a mess every day. No, he happens also to be bright, he happens to be kind, he happens to do favors with people. So, you know, once you start putting things in perspective, but even if there's not much else, people are not defined by their behavior, people are defined by their soul, by who they are, right? So therefore, first of all, there's a logical disputing. Logical disputing is, you know, I wish they would be more responsible, but it doesn't always happen, right? And also, if I want to, the dispute also, if I want actually for them to be responsible, I need to start thinking of some strategies to do that, right? I need to talk to Tim that he should be more supportive, that kind of thing, right? So the positive actions are then, obviously, first of all, that's logical disputing. The deeper disputing is the thing I said before. People are not defined by their behavior. They're not always irresponsible. They're not bad kids. Actually, there's a lot good about them. They have an issue which I need to deal with, but actually I need to love them first. I actually need to love them, I need to accept them, and I need to accept that this is one of their personality flaws which they were given. They're not defined by it. They're not mean to come and drive me crazy all day, but it's an issue which I need to deal with, but I first need to understand that I need to accept them as people because they're not defined by their behavior. And their behavior is not a display of fighting me either. Right. And therefore you go to solutions. Solutions are things where you have a long talk, you make a family meeting, you put in strategies, incentives, consequences, whatever the case is, and you deal with it in a level-headed way. So those are just a couple of examples. I mean, there's more, but this is the sort of idea. Now, I want to just end with one thing, two things quickly. First of all, in order to do this, there's a couple of conditions. Number one, we need to believe that we can do this. We need to believe that we can actually change. We've spoken about this many times, right? We also need to take some responsibility. See, part of this concept is that I can change. I mean, I take responsibility. Not that I'm taking responsibility for someone else's failings, but I'm taking responsibility for my life. Getting frustrated, negatively angry, screaming at the driver, complaining about my kids, that's a crutch. In other words, it's an escape route. It's putting myself in a thing where I don't know what to do, so this is what I'm doing. I'm shifting all my anger to the outside, to someone else. That's what emotional responses are. Emotions are me reacting to someone or to something, right? So now I can walk around a whole day feeling really upset about the children, about the husband, about the driver, about the boss at work, because I'm off the hook. But nothing's happening. I'm just being ineffective. So part of this is all about taking responsibility for myself. What can I do about this? I can change. I can have flexible thinking. I can change the way I think and feel because, like we've said many times, we are people who have personality dispositions, but we're not bound by them because the uniqueness of every human being is we have part of God's infinity in us and therefore we could change. That's number one. Now, I want to just get to one more, which is what I call the behavioral dispute, a very powerful thing. And I'll tell you a personal story. Again, this is she gives an example also. If I get to it, I'll quote it to you if we have time. Otherwise, I'll do next week, but I'll just tell you a personal story. Because behavior is very, very powerful. So when I was in yeshiva, again, I only tell you the stories that work. So when I was in yeshiva, we had a system like this. So for a number of years in yeshiva, most of the day we learned with our learning partner, chavruta it's called, right? Where we prepare the Talmud, and we prepare the text, and we argue it out, and we try to understand as many. And then every day, for an hour, there was a lecturer who would give us a shiur. And then he would take the Talmud, which we already prepared, and he would really sort of unpack it and analyze it, and if he was good, he would really come up with a really, you know, good, innovative way of understanding it. He would suggest ways that we could understand, not understand it, bring commentaries that we didn't know about, and it was great. Okay. The way it worked is that in the years of yeshiva, sort of every year you graduated to the next class, right? Then every year had another, what they called magid shiur, another lecturer. There was one particular year that no one wanted to be in. He wasn't considered a very fantastic magid shiur, right? He wasn't considered the greatest lecturer. No one really. And when the year would come to an end, everyone that was in the class before him would start to kvetch. I've got to be in his shiur. Some people would think maybe we should change yeshivas. I don't know, whatever the case was. But that wasn't normally an option always. And then you'd end up going to his lecture. A lot of people would just sort of tune out, fall asleep, and be frustrated, right? In that particular year. So me and my chavruta, we were thinking about and talking about this. Without reading this book, it just happened to, thank God we had this thought. And we said, listen, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. We're going to be in this guy's class. Let's turn this whole thing around. Let's not just accept it, but actually let's get really involved. Right? Let's get really involved like that. So we decided, you know what, we're going to treat this as if it is the world's biggest lecture. We're going to take notes. We're going to revise the shiur. We're going to challenge him if we think he was talking nonsense. But we're going to, right? Which is fine. That's part of what you do in yeshiva. That's okay. Right? And I'm telling you, we actually had one of the best years in yeshiva. I still have the notes from that magid shiur. I still have them somewhere at home. We took notes. I haven't asked Macharut if he still has them. He's living somewhere else. But it was the most amazing thing. And that's what we call behavioral dispute. That's the power of feelings follow action, right? And she gives this, I'll give you an example she gives because it's a really good example, right? So she talks about a person, I'll read it to you. Betty used to get frustrated every time she had to attend dinners and social functions with certain members of her extended family. She considered them to be ignorant peasants and hated having to spend time with this ordeal. Sometimes she'd make up excuses and get out of attending, much to the annoyance of her husband and mother-in-law. Sometimes she came along grudgingly and made no effort to talk to anyone. And it just obviously wasn't working. Yes. So finally, Betty decided to change her attitude. Her first decision was to stop making excuses and attend all the things. Then when she attended, she decided she deliberately chose to participate in the conversation, even with people she didn't like. Right? Instead of ignoring or judging them, Betty listened to what they had to say and tried to acknowledge their right to a point of view. Although her views were different, Betty came to accept that they're entitled to their perspective and she could talk to them without judging them. Right? What used to be a major chore became a painless because Betty changed her behavior as well as her attitude. I would say even further, probably that when you do this, you find out that actually they're not so ignorant, perhaps they have something to say, right?
Or not.
Or you disagree with it. Right, that's right. Or not, that's correct. Or you agree with it. You know, I learned this actually on reflection. One of the people that I know, who was a master at this, and I'll tell you a line he always used to say, he was a master at this, was my father-in-law of blessed memory, who I think I've described him to you, he was a Talmudic genius. I mean, he was an unbelievable person, very smart, very intelligent. And he used to be an unbelievable listener. Now, if someone would try and discuss something with him, he would listen very attentively. Now, once I asked him, he says, you never know, he's talking Yiddish always. Efshef te zogen, a klein word. Maybe say something that I didn't know before. Amazing, amazing humility actually also. But there was that concept, right? But you have to be ready for that. So in this case, it's the same sort of thing. The situation. Now, you don't have to go to every dinner party. I mean, but when you're in this situation, you do. If it's part of your family, that's what it is, right? Family things you have to go to sometimes. And so rather than having it being painful, you can actually not only find solutions, you can find what I call disputing behaviors. In other words, what can I dafka do that will actually throw me into this? There will be a behavior that is such a powerful behavior that will make me immerse myself and engage in the situation in a powerful way, and I actually might learn something, and it will change the way I feel, and might make me actually start to enjoy the process. So all of this is part of what I call the thought monitoring process. Very, very important. Knowing what we believe, knowing how we believe, knowing what the deeper beliefs behind it all is, and then starting to dispute it and trying to implement some solutions that are consistent with our new beliefs and the way we've disputed the whole process. So it's very powerful. Obviously, we're going to continue it. We will get to the concept of worry, as I said, because there's